Hello and welcome to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. I'm your host, Ian Harditz, and today we continue a Fantasy File series. It's a little broader topic. I want to go through some of my top values and fades in my rankings, which you can find on PFF.com compared to ADP. I think it's a really good practice out there to, you know, just every couple of weeks, take your rankings, see who you're higher on, see who you're lower on. Does that make sense to you? If not, maybe it's time to change rankings. And if it does make sense to you, hey, maybe that's something we should be valuing, fading more aggressively in drafts. So I know with a lot of these articles and then corresponding podcasts, I'm focusing more on a specific, you know, player or position group on a team. As you all know, you know, in the 100 question series, we do have four additional questions, you know, three per team only gives us 96. So I have four wild cards. That's why I talk about, you know, who we're going to play against aliens sometimes. And also just certain teams like the Lions. I don't know that we need to go over their quarterback and their, you know, passing game situation in two separate podcasts. So that's why this one's a little more general. But yeah, let's basically get to it then, people. Starting off, I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is this year's premier late round quarterback. I've been on the record with that for a while. And the only reason why I wasn't saying that was because Ryan Tannehill had an ADP as like the QB 16 until everyone finally wised up once they got Julio Jones. So that kind of made it a little easy. But otherwise, I still think it's Fitzpatrick. Right now, he has an ADP as the QB 23. He is my QB 16. Basically, the reasoning comes down to we've only seen this guy be a QB 1 over the past three seasons, which is the sample size we should be working off of most directly. In 2018, fantasy QB 1 in weeks 1 through 3 while Jameis was suspended. 2019, he was the QB 2 in weeks 7 through 17 upon taking over full-time from Josh Rosen. In 2020, he was the QB 8 in weeks 1 through 6 before, quote-unquote, losing the job to Tua. I'm not down on Tua in the future necessarily, but Fitzpatrick was just objectively better in the exact same offense last year, and we saw him have to bail this team out on multiple occasions. So Fitz, moving into this year, we got Terry, Curtis, Logan, Diami, Gibson, McKissick. Plenty of places to go with the football. Logan Thomas. Yeah, okay, I mentioned him. Thank God. But the bigger thing is like we finally don't have this top 10 first round quarterback that we need to worry about. Like, I don't blame the Buccaneers or the Dolphins for prioritizing Jameis, Rosen briefly, and then Tua last year. I don't blame them for prioritizing those guys over Fitzpatrick if it's at all close, or even if it's not. You got to find out what you have in those guys, not this aging quarterback. With that said, this is the first time we don't have that sort of player. We got, you know, the token nose assistant backup in Kyle Allen. We got a Taysom Hill doppelganger and Steven Montez. And then the biggest competition is Taylor Heinicke, who, hey, all the credit and respect in the world to that guy for what he did in that playoff game. That's still not the only time we've seen Heinicke play football. He has been dirt average to below average every other time he's been out there. Not a huge sample, but seriously, people, like Fitzpatrick, if he can't beat out Heinicke, I'll come here and say I was wrong. I think he can, because he has been an above average quarterback for the past 3 years and much more than an above average quarterback in fantasy land. So Fitzpatrick, in my opinion, is a guy being priced far closer to his floor than his ceiling, literally, you know, low end, barely even a QB two. And I think if we had to assume he's a starter and say, where are we going to rank him in week one, we'd see him much closer to that QB one borderline, where he probably should be ranked closer to as it is now. My main quarterback fade is, unfortunately, look, I don't want to fade anyone. I would love for every single player in the league to be great. That's why we always say, you know, don't hate players, hate ADPs. And I am not liking Trevor Lawrence's ADP, people. He is going off the board as the QB 14 right now. I have him as a QB 19. I see the path to success. He checks the boxes all of our past rookie QB ones have been able to do. And we've only had, let's see if I can rip them off. There's been seven: Kyler Murray, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, RG3, Justin Herbert just got there, Cam Newton, and Andrew Luck. There we go. That's the seven. All those guys except Herbert started in week one. They all averaged at least 25 rushing yards per game, as we saw with Herbert. Week two, much more athletic than he was used at Oregon. So Lawrence checks those boxes. He's going to be out there week one. And he was a great rusher at Clemson, even if he's not, you know, necessarily going to be used like a version of JT Barrett. I mean, Fields and Lance, I think we all rightfully expect to be used more as pure rushers than Lawrence. So I'm not saying he couldn't get this done, but at what point are we giving any sort of faith in this Jaguars offense? We got one just controversial and puzzling decision after another from Urban Meyer throughout this whole offseason. We had, you know, a chance for a team with so much cap space, all this high-end draft capital, to really add some legit weapons to this offense. We came away with Marvin Jones, Tim Tebow, and Travis Etienne. And I'm not even hating on Marvin Jones and Etienne per se, but considering the possibilities we were telling ourselves in March, this is why I've soured on Lawrence throughout the entire, you know, offseason. He still very well could be the next big thing at quarterback. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with the idea that he's this generational quarterback prospect. I am thinking, though, that Urban Meyer's first year might not be that great, particularly if he's going to be as involved in the offense as it seems like he will be, you know, based on this ETN slash news and all that. So Trevor Lawrence, I won't disagree with anyone that still wants to make him the dynasty QB one. Personally, I would go with Trey Lance. And I think in redraft, already buying him as a borderline QB one, I can't do it. Give me guys like, you know, Stafford, Burrow, Brady, all those guys in that range, and the rookie quarterbacks, and Fitzpatrick, Matt Ryan, all these guys I'm taking over Trevor Lawrence this year. Maybe I'll be wrong. Again, I see the pathway to success if everything goes right for him. Suddenly, though, we need a lot more things to go right than Lawrence than I think we were hoping for back when he was drafted in April. Some quick honorable mentions. I'm a little bit higher on Sam Darnold and Zach Wilson than I expected, which is wild because I kind of rip apart Darnold every other podcast, it seems like, on here. But when they're going as QB 31, QB 30 guys, I do think, you know, they're reasonable enough end of best ball draft stacking guys. Trey Lance, someone that I'm also certainly higher on. And we've talked about the difference in, you know, rankings and projections. Trey Lance, based on 17 game projected production, probably shouldn't be going as high as he is. But when we consider who do we actually want on our team when push comes to shove, that's when Trey Lance is your guy. Baker Mayfield, also someone I've made a priority in the later rounds of drafts. After that weird three-game just weather stretch we had last year, he was the QB 13, QB 3, QB 3, QB 12, QB 26 in the Jets game where they didn't have wide receivers, and QB 22 against Pittsburgh to end the season. So Baker, we've had multiple stints of him being a near every week QB one. I think with a healthy version of OBJ going the second year in the Kevin Stefanski offense, all the arrows are pointing up for Baker. A couple other guys I'm just a little down on, Mac Jones. And again, he's going so low anyway, it's not a huge hot take, but I just think even if he gets out there sooner rather than later, we just haven't seen him have anything resembling the sort of brushing upside that we've seen from past successful rookie quarterbacks. And Matthew Stafford, I'm just a couple spots lower than consensus. I'm a borderline QB one. I'm not down on the guy. When I see him going top 10, though, I'm a little concerned about the overall volume. This could be an offense we see not, you know, ranked top five and running the ball, but they're also not necessarily going to be that much of a pass happy offense, particularly if that defense continues to look like one of the best units in the league with Jalen Ramsey and Aaron Donald. I'll just take guys like Tom Brady, Joe Burrow ahead of Stafford because of the potential to have, you know, an extra 100 dropbacks on the season. Moving right along to running back, my top value is Buffalo Bills running back Zach Moss. You know, we've talked about the problems that rushing quarterbacks can have on their running backs. And we've seen that with Josh Allen. Only Lamar Jackson has more rush attempts than Allen since 2018. And nobody has more scores on the ground at the position. I mean, literally people, the only guys with more rushing touchdowns than Josh Allen since 2018, Derrick Henry, Todd Gurley, Alvin Kamara, Aaron Jones, Dalvin Cook, Nick Chubb, Christian McCaffrey, Melvin Gordon. That's it. So overall, Bills running backs have had the NFL's fourth fewest total rush attempts inside the 10-yard line since 2018. And unfortunately, this has also impacted their receiving workload. They are, again, fourth to last while looking at total targets over the past three seasons. Instead of, you know, dumping the ball down, Josh Allen chucks it deep or runs. It's great for his fantasy stock, not so much with the running backs. But with all that said, I do think Moss could eventually take over because the Bills are about to have, you know, nine digits worth of reasons to not maybe give Allen quite as much work near the goal line. And it has been designed a lot. It's not necessarily Allen just saying, you know, I'm going to run this ball myself. He does that sometimes, but removing scrambles from the equation, only Lamar Jackson and Cam Newton have more designed rush attempts inside the 10-yard line than Allen since 2018. So again, hundreds of millions of reasons to limit this. We got Moss being the guy where we got the Athletics Joe Busca. Oh man, I messed up his name. Sorry, Joe. But he noted in his excellent preview on the Bills fantasy targets that Moss was the preferred option in eight games where injuries weren't a factor last year. And if anyone's going to take it over, it's going to be him, not Devin Singletary. We saw this, you know, over the last 2 years, really, where when Singletary, you know, he doesn't necessarily get the full every down role, particularly in terms of touches, when Frank Gore or Zach Moss missed time, we would see TJ Yeldon, who wasn't usually active, come up and then start to split touches. So Zach Moss, to me, where he's going is just far closer to his floor than his ceiling if the Bills start to kind of change this offense around, feature more of a true RB1. not to completely, you know, piss on the Jaguars this whole podcast, but my top fade at running back is James Robinson. We're looking at best case scenario for Robinson, I believe, as the lead early down back in a three back committee. And to see him have an ADP, at least from this source, as the RB25, we just can't get behind this anymore, people. And I'm hoping this is just being more influenced by some of the, you know, pre-April drafts, but he's my RB34. I just think ETN is going to lead this backfield in touches, targets, rush attempts, everything. ETN only played 84 total snaps, I believe, in the slot or out wide during his 55 games at Clemson. So I get that he's probably going to get a couple design looks in the slot out wide. You know, Urban's calling him slash and all that. With that said, projecting him to be a full-time receiver, I think, is just a little bit of a large leap to faith. We're taking that from basically an OTA quote from Urban Meyer talking about how they want to help him out as a receiver. What that tells me is that ETN already is getting the backfield's targets now, which leaves what for Robinson? It's going to be likely an early down committee of sorts between him and Carlos Hyde. I'm not saying Carlos Hyde is even in Robinson's stratosphere at this point as a real life talent, but he's not bad. And Carlos Hyde is the one that scored 35 touchdowns in 21 games with Urban freaking Meyer calling plays in 2012, 2013. So I think if the Tebow and the Hyde and these signings tell us anything, it's that Urban is doing a little bit of that typical, you know, I want my guys that used to play for me type of shtick here with his potential depth chart. So James Robinson, if ETN gets hurt, or Hyde gets hurt, like we're looking a little bit better. I just think right now to be paying a, you know, low end potential borderline RB2 price for someone whose team just drafted a first round running back, it's just far too much. ETN is the guy that's going to be taking over this backfield if anyone, not James Robinson. Some honorable mentions. We went through the handcuff landscape a couple episodes ago. Basically, I'm higher on the likes of AJ Dillon, Joshua Kelly, Jamal Williams, and Samaje Perine than most. I just think each of those guys are one injury away from potentially having a huge role, even if you don't necessarily love their just general football ability. Wayne Gallman, I think, has a pretty wide range of outcomes. Maybe he doesn't even make the roster, or maybe the Athletic report saying he was the RB2 when OTA is open ends up being true. So, you know, in these kind of crowded back, Fields, Patriots, Shanahan, the usual lesson we have, take the cheapest one. Right now, that's Wayne Gallman. Javonte Williams, I find myself, you know, still treating as a low-end RB2. I just don't see Melvin Gordon staying all that consistently involved. You know, he's a prime example of when to, you know, look at points per game instead of total points on last year, because much more of a, you know, back-end, actually a high-end RB3, I believe he finished on a per-game basis, as opposed to the high-end RB2 when he grew up in all the games. I just think with the late-season DUI, him not being all that impressive in general. Like, they drafted Javonte Williams, just like the Jaguars drafted ETN for a reason. It's to get fed the rock. So both Javonte and ETN, I think, are values because we're already looking at them having usable, at worst, flex roles. If nothing changes, if nothing goes their way in the backfield, if things do go their way, they become featured backs in, you know, not great offenses, but featured backs with plenty of volume. Some guys I'm fading, Mark Ingram and Marlon Mack, players that I think will have roles in their respective committees, just never going to have anything enough to make themselves legit fantasy options. I'm a little bit down on James Conner. People seem to be hyping themselves up into this guy this year. And I understand all the goal line stuff. I told you guys those cool stats a few episodes ago. Chase Edmonds, only one career carry inside the five. James Conner has been one of the higher graded running backs in those opportunities. With that said, Edmonds is the guy that's been there. Conner's contract is nothing that would make us think that, you know, they need to pay him. Money's not exactly talking there. And Conner, like, as much as those goal line carries might be useful, Chase Edmonds is the one still seemingly set to get a lot of the fantasy friendly receptions. So fingers crossed that Rondale Moore isn't going to eat too much into Edmonds receiving opportunity. If he doesn't, I still think Edmonds is definitely the running back to get in Arizona. Mention why I'm low on Melvin Gordon. Josh Jacobs also falls into my, you know, quote unquote fade category. I just think that even though he might be underrated in terms of pure rushing ability, the Raiders aren't happy enough with it. That's why they brought in Kenyon Drake. That's why Jalen Richard is still there. We've never seen him get the targets that we know he warrants as terms of what he showed at Alabama. And now with Drake potentially being just an even bigger number two running back than they've had during his time there, I just think we're looking at a guy that, unless you can get, you know, in the back half of the RB20 range, I'm just not going to be coming away with much in fantasy drafts this year. I mentioned Devin Singletary is someone that just doesn't get the full job, even if Moss gets hurt. I think the same thing applies for JD McKissick. Led the position in targets last year, which is obviously great and all. With that said, his issue was that 51 of those position high came in the slot or out wide. Now we got Curtis Samuel, Adam Humphries, Diami Brown, plenty of reasons, and not even talking about the potential for Antonio Gibson, just take a leap forward. Plenty of reasons why McKissick will not have that same fantasy-friendly role in 2021. At wide receiver, my top value against ADP is Jalen Waddle, my wide receiver 32, ADP wide receiver 46. I don't know why he's not getting the same love as Devontae and Jamar Chase, at this point. I mean, I know Will Fuller could be the number one. So could Devontae Parker, but Waddle's the one that just got the number six overall draft capital. And he's projected to be the guy in the slot. And we saw Lynn Bowden have this role at the end of last season, and it produced 7.8 targets per game for the guy. So Waddle, you know, there was a report from a certain Miami beat writer who is infamous for not really being a very good beat writer. I'm not going to throw him too far under the bus. There was a report saying that Waddle was limping, and people quickly shot that down. So if we're getting the healthy version of Waddle, which having this whole offseason and based on what we've heard from the Dolphins, we have reason to believe we're looking at a receiver with, again, elite draft capital, slotted in for an immediate starting role with his former collegiate teammate under center, being priced as a borderline wide receiver 4. That's something I'm interested in. And again, it's just what could we get from Waddle at his ceiling compared to where he's being drafted? I don't think anyone would be that shocked if the number six overall pick from the draft is a top 30 receiver in fantasy land last year. And if he's not, like, okay, where we're drafting him right now, that's not ruining your draft either. So drafting Jamar Chase in round 4 or 5, that could potentially ruin your draft if, you know, things go south for him as a rookie. The targets are too crowded and maybe he just struggles. You know, the guy's 21 years old or whatever. It wouldn't be the first time a highly thought after a receiver can't produce. Jamar Chase needs to be great in order to meet his ADP. Waddle just needs to be good to beat his ADP. And those are the types of situations we should be looking at in those, you know, middle to later rounds of drafts. I am leaning towards fading Adam Thielen a bit more this year. Look, I was all over him last year. He was my wide receiver 6. I was well ahead of the industry on it. I just think I got lucky with that ultimately because of how many touchdowns this dude scored. I didn't see Justin Jefferson being arguably the greatest rookie receiver ever. So that's on me. But looking at Thielen in 2017, 2018, he had target totals exceeding 140. Last year, 7.2 targets per game. I mean, again, 2017 was 8.9, 2018 was 9.6, but Thielen had those 14 touchdowns. So, you know, I hate being the guy. It's like, oh, regression, regression, regression. But come on, he's not going to score 14 touchdowns on 108 targets again. So Thielen turning 31 in August, the passing game remains condensed around him and Jefferson. I just wouldn't be surprised if we see Jefferson start to grow out of that even a little bit more. And not that, you know, Thielen's going to fall off a cliff next year, but I'd rather not use top 20 draft capital at the position on a guy that's probably going to be his team's number 2 wide receiver. He's still in a run first offense, and Father Time is eventually going to start working against him a bit more. Going through some honorable mentions, Tre'Quan Smith, I'm a little bit higher on just because he's projected to be a number 2 wide receiver for the Saints, and the public just does not seem to care about that. If Jameis wins that job, I certainly think we could see more than one fantasy relevant wide receiver out of New Orleans. Same thing is true to a lesser extent for Olamide Zaccheaus with the Falcons. I do think Gage and Kyle Pitts will work ahead of him, but again, when these guys are just as cheap and free as they are, they become values. Scotty Miller has already been one of my favorite late round best ball picks. We want to talk about wide receiver forehand cuffs. I mean, Scotty, I think, has a case to be made that he's right there at the top of the list. Jacoby Myers and Nelson Agholor are guys that are popping for me as well. Like, no, I didn't consider myself a Jacoby Myers stan until I found out that the public is drafting 75 receivers before this guy. I mean, even if it's Cam Newton over Mac Jones, I know we got the tight ends there, but when Agholor and Myers are this cheap, we're going to see the Patriots have a top 50 wide receiver in fantasy land. And those are your best options. And when they're not being priced, even among the top 65 players, that's when it becomes a value, people. Tutu Atwell and Dwayne Eskridge, they're not even being priced in the top 100 players, even though they have good draft capital and they have seemingly pretty easy pass into their teams, 3 wide receiver sets. I know it's not going to be easy. They each have, you know, 2 alpha wide receivers in the offense to share with. But again, just based on the rank versus the ADP, I do think these rookies are, you know, setting up pretty nicely. Talked about Tyler Boyd. He's one of my, you know, favorite overall values. I could have easily subbed him in for Jalen Waddle. I just think the fact he's going 10 10 to 15 wide receiver slots behind Higgins and Chase doesn't make any sense when we're projecting them all for a similar amount of targets. Also would say KJ Hamler being so far on the outside between Courtland Sutton and Jerry Jeudy doesn't make a ton of sense. Seems like the clock's about to strike midnight on, you know, the potential for Aaron Rodgers to take his talents elsewhere. With that said, Hamler, if that, you know, scenario does come to fruition, we would see his ADP absolutely skyrocket. Basically some guys I'm fading a little bit more relative to the ranks because I'm higher on Laviska Shenault, Tutu Atwell, and KJ Hamler has me lower accordingly on DJ Chark, Deshaun Jackson, and Jerry Jeudy. I don't understand why Jameson Crowder is still a top 70 receiver. They signed Corey Davis to a big deal. They drafted Elijah Moore, and Jameson Crowder very well could not be starting in three wide receiver sets to start the year. I'm not going to be betting on aging veterans like AJ Green, Sammy Watkins, I shouldn't even say aging. He's only like 27 or 28 still. Maybe we'll sign him for week one and that's it. Emmanuel Sanders, also just, you know, new offenses for these aging veterans, not something I'm going to invest in with too much urgency. Michael Pittman, I'm just a little down on, and maybe I'm not giving enough credit to it, but when we look at this offense, the problem last year was it was too crowded. Now we have a potential QB downgrade. Like, come on, people. Phillip Rivers was better than Carson Wentz in 2020. I don't know why this is like this hot take I've needed to explain before. It's just a fact. Pull up any stat you want to, and you're going to see that reflected. So we got a potential QB downgrade. Everyone other than Trey Burton is back in this passing game. So the fact that Hilton, Pascal, Paris Campbell's coming back healthy, I'm just not sure where Pittman necessarily sees more than 90 to 100 targets. Maybe he turns into the alpha. He looked really good in that playoff game. When you get the ball in his hands, good things happen. I'm just not convinced that they have these major plans to feature him ahead of everybody else. Finally, getting to the tight end position. My top value is Tennessee Titans tight end Anthony Firkser. I feel like he was getting hype, and then we brought in Julio Jones and we all kind of freaked out. And I don't really think that's fair. Like, losing Jonnu Smith is still enough for Firkser to, I think, be treated as a borderline tight end one. He's my tight end 13, ADP, tight end 23. Just look at the Titans over the past 2 years in terms of just team-wide ranks. Targets to the tight end, they're 12th. Receptions to the tight end, they're tied for 8th. Receiving yards, they're 8th. Touchdowns, they're 5th. Yards per route run, they are 6th. So, you know, in fantasy drafts, again, I really think you should try to get Kelce, Waller, or Kittle early on. But if you can't, Firkser or Adam Trautman at the end of this late round zone, I think makes sense because both guys aren't offenses that historically really enabled their tight end well. And when you look at the competition on the roster for them, they've each lost the main pieces, and their team showed us that they're confident in Trautman, confident in Firkser by not adding other major pieces throughout the draft or free agency. So Firkser is someone that I think could easily, maybe not lead the Titans in touchdowns, but we could see this passing game, if Tannehill keeps on keeping on, enable three relevant pass game options. I will be fading Evan Engram. Somehow still has an ADP as a tight end 11. He's my tight end 20. If you ever needed another reason to not give a single shit about the Pro Bowl, it's the fact that Evan Engram somehow made the Pro Bowl in 2020. 109 targets, 63 catches, 654 yards, one receiving score. Jason Garrett also gave him 6 rush attempts for some reason. To Ingram's credit, one of those also ended in the end zone. But this was the thing. Engram did all that last year as the number one pass game option in New York. Now they signed Kenny Galladay to a big deal. They drafted Kadarius Toney in the first round. Saquon Barkley is back, and they gave Kyle Rudolph a 2-year $12 million contract. Like, that is not insignificant, people. That's legit money. And so for Engram, who had the second worst quarterback rating when targeted, ahead of only, I think, Zach Ertz last season, he was 45th among 49 guys in percentage of catchable targets caught, 43rd in drop rate, 39th in PFF receiving grade. Like, he was just a bad player last year. And even if Daniel Jones experiences all sorts of positive regression, starts throwing touchdowns left and right, I mean, there's a chance we still don't see Engram beat his ADP because Rudolph's taking the red zone targets, and Galladay and or Tony are the now featured guys getting, you know, Jason Garrett's already not very well designed plays anyway. So, I mean, for Engram to still be getting top 12 tight end benefit of the doubt, like we saw last year, the volume was there, the health was there. Those have usually been the problems. Even when they were there, Engram couldn't overcome it. So, hey, maybe he gets back to looking like the better prospect that we thought he was in the earlier parts of his career. But right now, just if it was only a bet on just expecting him to get a little better than he was last year, I might be fine taking that. But now with all these extra volume questions introduced, I am not in on Evan Engram. couple honorable mentions. Mo Alley Cox is someone that I've just, you know, ever since I had to get off the Chris Herndon train, I think Mo Alley Cox has become my favorite, you know, third tight end to round out the best ball lineups. Trey Burton's no longer in Indy. Jack Doyle's another year older. I know they got their fourth round receiving friendly tight end. So it's not a given that Maka takes on that lead role, but I do like him at cost. Tyler Higbee didn't meet preseason expectations last year. Now the problem, Gerald Everett is gone. Stafford, improving passing game. Love Higbee. And people, Jacob Harris, chill out. It's fine in Dynasty. This is a converted wide receiver, a fourth round rookie, and we think he's going to overtake Tyler Higbee. Come on. They've already given Higbee a big contract. The guy is a great blocker. You might not like certain things about his past, about his past in terms of, you know, what he believes in and all that. I won't get into it, but just please save me the idea that Jacob Harris could like replace Tyler Higbee is so absurd to me. Maybe he is good enough to be a number two tight end like Gerald Everett, and he limits the overall target share possibility, but just actual people thinking that Higbee is not going to be starting because of Jacob Harris is crazy to me. So we'll see. If I'm wrong, you can mock me for this, but excuse me for not thinking the converted fourth round rookie receiver beats out Higbee. Excuse me. Speaking of Gerald Everett, he also is someone I'm higher on, with, you know, potential to function as Russell Wilson's number one tight end. Now with Jimmy Graham, I mean, Jimmy Graham scored double digit touchdowns in that role in 2017. We just need Russ to have one tight end. We got the Shane Waldron connection, LA Rams, you know, pass game coordinator now in Seattle. Gerald Everett has a realistic chance of making some big noise this season. Talked about Adam Trautman. But yeah, you know, with Jameis Winston, we never had an issue with overall production, the tight end with Jameis. It was just that it was split up between OJ Howard and Cam Brate. Adam Trautman, PFF's reigning number one run blocker, also showed off some goodness as a route runner. That's what he was best at Dayton. I think Trautman could be their undisputed starting tight end sooner rather than later. Cole Kmet, someone that seems to be getting close to that. I mean, he was playing almost every snap by the end of 2021. His ceiling will be hurt as long as Jimmy Graham remains on the team. Still someone that I think where they're going carries more upside than they're being given credit for. Rob Gronkowski is someone that I'm going to be out on this year. Another year older, wasn't the main receiving tight end when OJ Howard was healthy. And just everyone in this offense, like, it's not even against Gronk. The guy just scored two touchdowns in the Super Bowl. I'm not saying he's done, but when there's Gronk, when there's OJ Howard / Cam Brate / you know, Giovanni Bernard now / maybe Fournette still / Godwin, AB, Evans, Tyler Johnson, Scotty Miller. There are so many places to go with the ball. I just don't see Gronk being overly relied on a week to week basis. So to give him, you know, top 12 tight end treatment, I don't know. I just don't think he has the ceiling for much more than being a borderline tight end one. And again, people, first or last, we were trying to draft for ceilings here. Jared Cook landed on my ageist list. I just don't think he looked like the same caliber athlete. And even if he is the starting tight end for the Chargers, I mean, Mike Williams, Keenan Allen, Austin Eckler should get more targets. I wouldn't be shocked if we see Cook's target share just kind of split down the middle with Donald Parham, even XFL All-Star. So Cook, again, best case scenario, I think, is as the offense's number four pass game option. That's not enough for me to get behind. Zach Ertz, you know, the trade radar continues to look out. We're waiting for him to get sent to Buffalo or somewhere. I just don't think, based on how horrendous he was last year, wherever he goes, I don't see the efficiency and, you know, just reason to really back him at any sort of valuation at the moment. And then Hunter Henry, Jonnu Smith. I would put Jonnu ahead of Henry, but if seeing Henry have top 10 ADP right now, very surprising to me. Only Gronk and Aaron Hernandez, as well as Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert, have functioned as top 12 tight ends in the same offense in the same season. I'm just not really betting on the Patriots in the 2021 version, at least being able to replicate that. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in, as always, to PFF Fantasy Football Podcast. We went a little longer on this one than usual, good 28 minutes. But hey, you know, I wanted to get out some values and fades, be more specific with you guys, trying to help out, you know, with the upcoming drafts that I'm hoping everyone is starting to get into. So again, new fantasy files every single day throughout the offseason, and we're going to start getting some team previews going, as we had last Friday with Andrew Erickson breaking down the NFC South. We'll continue to roll through those once a week. And also we have, you know, some 10 question series coming up. Hopefully some more NFL players. Really enjoyed talking to Antonio Gibson about a week ago, and also some fantasy minds from around the industry. So thank you, as always, for tuning in. Until next time, take care, everybody.